March 21st, 2014, in Overdon, India, at the Vaishnava Retreat. We're studying Canto 10, Chapter 32, Krishna's Reciprocation. This is part 2. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda.
Krishna, 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 Hare Hare.
Was everybody, is anyone here who was not here yesterday? So we're not going to review much. We're just going to go on then. Right, so after waiting for billions of years, finally to see Krishna, and Krishna calls you, and you go to Krishna, he tells you to go home, and you argue with him, and you stay, and he starts talking with you and walking with you through the forest, and could you always walk behind the projector instead of in front of it, thank you. And then he's walking with you and he's playing and laughing and joking, and then all of a sudden he leaves. And then he comes back. And the gopis ask, what did they ask? Anybody remember what they asked? Three kinds of persons. What were the three kinds of persons? Yes? They reciprocate just equally in the next? Indifferent also? Those who just don't care at all? And the other one? They love when someone doesn't love them. So the gopi said there's three kinds of people. One, they whatever they get, they give back. And another kind, they give even when they don't get. And another kind, don't give at all. And did they ask Krishna, who are you? Did they say that?
No.
No. What did they say?
Which one is the best?
Who's the best? Who's the most honest? They didn't say, so who are you? But they were thinking that. And they were trying to analyze, right? Well, it doesn't seem like you... They said, it doesn't seem like you just give what you get. It doesn't seem like you give without getting. So you must be ungrateful. That's what they're wondering. So now Krishna's going to answer. Now we're not going to get the real answer till tomorrow, everybody. Or not tomorrow, day after tomorrow. Hey, you know, the gopis waited for billions of years. So we can wait till the real answer is not going to come till the day after tomorrow. And I think the real answer will surprise you. Who Krishna is. What type he is. So the first part of Krishna's answer is just simply going to be taking the gopis' three types and expanding them into nine. So he's going to be taking the three types and expanding them into nine. And he's going to say, okay, you've told me three types of people and loving exchanges, but really there's nine types of people and loving exchanges. And then Krishna will say who he is and who he's not and what he's doing and why he's doing it. So if you want to find out why we chant and chant and chant, and sometimes Krishna's there for a moment and then he goes away. Or why we chant and chant and chant, Krishna's just not there. of why Krishna reciprocates with us the way he does or doesn't reciprocate, we're going to have to wait till Tuesday to get that answer. The gopis have to wait too, because they're listening to this conversation. And they have to wait till Krishna gets to the point too. And I'm sure it seemed like a long time to them. I'm sure a lot of them were thinking, would you please get to the point and tell us which one are you? But as we go through this first part of the discussion, we're going to have some understanding of ourselves and some understanding of the nature of love. Right? I think that we often want to understand the motives of the people with whom we associate. And our own motives. So those are the questions we'll be looking at today. We're not going to get this insight into Krishna's heart yet. That'll be on Tuesday. But we will get some insight, I think, today into our own heart. What kind of person am I? Probably we'll find that we're a little bit of different categories. And to think about, how can I be the best person? And I don't want to give too much away from Tuesday, but that's a big question here. You know, we go to Krishna, so who are you? And Krishna's really throwing it back at us and saying, well, who are you? So we often go to Krishna, why aren't you reciprocating the way I want? And Krishna's saying, how are you loving? How are you reciprocating? How do you treat me? How do you treat others? And of course, we can also understand something here about others. Although, please, do not try to understand something here about others in order to feel superior to them.
Please don't do that. I mean, you can do whatever you want, but I would humbly suggest that you don't do that. Just not a very good idea.
Your volume's all the way down to nothing. Let's do that again. I can make it quieter here if I want to, but all the way down. Okay? Louder, 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 louder. Do it again. That's full volume? Oh. Oh, I see. I thought it was headphones. Sorry, my fault, not your fault. Totally my fault. When I plugged in the speakers, the computer thought, oh, you're plugging in headphones. I don't want to blow out your ears. So I turned my... Sometimes the computers are too smart, you know? Okay, I'm going to try again. Thank you. Sorry that I blamed you when it was totally my fault. So Krishna looked, first of all, before he answered. So Krishna looked at the gopis very sweetly. Krishna loves to communicate by looking very sweetly at his devotees. And then Krishna gave an answer that was a little humorous. That's a nice thing to do when people are angry with you, because they were really angry, by the way. Try to diffuse it with a little kind and loving humor. And the taste in Krishna's words, the experience, the taste of the words, yes, Pribhanti Bhagavata Atmanasatam. One drinks the Bhagavatam. There's a taste in Krishna's words, and this taste was so sweet, it was just like nectar. So Krishna's going to now explain 9 ways, and some of them are worse than others, and each way gives its own result. So this is his first category, is he's looking again at the categories of the gopis and expanding them. So this first one, the people who reciprocate the love only of those who show love towards them. So Krishna said, these people, they're really just selfish. They're not really caring about the people that they're loving. They're only thinking about getting something for themselves. They're calculating, you know, okay, I give this much only because I'm going to get that much. Krishna says they're just like merchants. So we have to say that almost all the loving relations in the world are in this category. I was speaking yesterday about how there's books about relating between men and women, and it will talk about how women give a score to the men. Okay, he bought me flowers, that's 5 points. You know, he watched the kids for an hour, that's 5 points. And the man gives a score to the woman. Right? She leaves me alone while I watch the football game, that's 20 points. And they're calculating, how much am I giving, how much am I getting back? How do we know that we have this kind of relationship? We know we have this kind of relationship when we become angry, bitter, frustrated, disturbed, sad, disgusted, when we don't get the reciprocation from the other person that we think that we deserve. Whenever we say, I've given so much, we know we have this kind of relationship. And this is the vast majority of our relationships are in this category. When we say, I've given you so much, I do this, I do this, I've done that, I've sacrificed this, I've sacrificed this, I've done this, I said this, and what have you done? Now, this operates not only between a husband and wife, it operates between parents and children. We can feel this way about our own parents, about our children, about our brothers and sisters, about the other devotees that we live with. people feel this way about their guru. I had people tell me this about their guru. You can feel this way about, you know, the temple authorities of the temple in which you serve. You can feel this way about kind of ISKCON in general, whatever that is exactly. You know, I've given so much to ISKCON, and what have I gotten? You know, I went to the festival and they didn't even give me a room or any prasadam. So anytime we have this kind of a reaction and we start thinking, okay, I'm not going to give anymore. Why should I keep giving? I've been giving and giving and giving and giving and giving and giving, and what did I get? What did I get back? These are also symptoms of this kind of relationship. We're watching and we're listening and we're paying attention to what the other person's giving. Other kind of signs of this sort of relationship are where we maximize in our mind what we are giving and we minimize in our mind what the other person is giving. So, you know, if I cook dinner every day, I'm making a big sacrifice. You know, when I take care of the children, I'm making a big sacrifice. But when my husband goes to work, that's just what he's supposed to do. That's not a sacrifice. That's just his job. You follow? So when other people do something for us, we see it, oh, that's their job. That's just what they're supposed to do. And when I do something, I'm making a sacrifice. That we don't see the sacrifices of others. You know, we see our own sacrifices and not the sacrifices of others. So we magnify. Prabhupada talks about the man who's ready to take sannyas. And he says to his wife, okay, I'm ready to take sannyas. And she says, you can't take sannyas. He said, but I've spent 25, 30, 35 years serving your family. And she says, what service have you done? Prabhupada talks about it. You haven't done anything. You just did your duty. What does Krishna say? There's just something really heavy here. He says there's no permanent dharma and no prema, no feeling of friendship, no happiness, no religiousness. Anytime we have relationships like this, those relationships are miserable. We are not happy and no one is happy. They're simply miserable. Someone asked in the last class, what is humility? Actually, they were really asking, when should I tell other people what to do? But the question of what is humility, a lot of humility is just thinking, I really haven't given anything. What have I given? And yet I'm receiving so much. And we may be afraid that if we think like that, that other people will simply exploit us. If I just give and give and give and give and give and don't expect anything in return, then people will exploit me. And therefore we're afraid to do that. But who are we really giving to? Are we really giving to the other jivas? Who should we really be giving to? To Krishna. We should really be giving to Krishna. And Krishna will respond unlimitedly. It is a fact that if you give to another jiva, separate from Krishna, that jiva will not be able to reciprocate with us the way that we want. Another jiva or another group of jivas, they will not be able to. And therefore, when we give to other jivas, expecting something in return from those jivas, we will always end up being disappointed, bitter, angry, and we'll lose our feeling of love and friendship for that person. We should also keep in mind that people will have that same experience with us. Just like no other jiva can fully reciprocate with me, I cannot fully reciprocate with anyone else either. So if somebody sacrifices for me and loves me and does all kinds of things for me, thinking that I will be able to satisfy them, after a while that person will come to hate me. I cannot be Krishna for anybody. I cannot. You know, I had someone some time ago who thought that I was going to be Krishna for her. And I said to her, I can't be Krishna for you. I can't be your mother, father, lover, you know, son, daughter, guru. Satjanika janani daitatanai prabhu patitu sarvamoy. I can't be that for you. I can be a very little bit of something. So I can't give that to others. And you know, if someone tries to ask that from us, how do you feel? How do you feel? If someone comes to you and tries to make you Krishna for them and says, okay, I want you to, you need to satisfy all of my needs and all of my desires. How do you feel? Huh? It's a big burden, isn't it? What do you want to do with as far as that person? What kind of relationship do you want to have with some person who does that? Nothing. You want to get as far away from them as you can, don't you? Because there are expectations of you. You can't fulfill them. It's just a burden. So, but why do we do that to other people? Why do we put that burden on other people? That you're going to satisfy. And this is especially true in marriage. Although people also do it with their children. Especially people do it with their spouses. But they will also do it with their children. They will also do it with their guru. And I think when you're devotees, it can be worse. Because you think, well, the person's a devotee, therefore an ordinary person couldn't satisfy all my desires, but this jiva can. They can't. What's the only way another jiva can satisfy all of our desires?
If we desire
their happiness. If they connect us with Krishna. Yes, and if we want to serve them, which we'll get to in a minute. That's, you're jumping to the next one. If they can connect us with Krishna, then they can satisfy all of our desires. But they can't satisfy all of our desires directly. It's just not possible. So whenever we enter in this sort of relationship, this contract with somebody, it's all a lie. It's a lie. That this person is going to be able to fully reciprocate with me as much as I give or as much as I need. They can't. They just can't. So that should not, anytime we have this kind of relationship with anybody, everybody will be miserable. Everybody will suffer. Even the feeling, as Krishna says, of friendship is gone. And if you think that's heavy, Krishna says, even those without a tinge of loving affairs are better than these merchants. Wow. Wow. Better not to have any pretense of love than to have this so-called loving exchange where I am apparently loving you, simply calculating what you are giving me in return. Where all of my love is simply about me and what you can do for me. What I find, though, is that people who are stuck in this kind of place, it's very hard for them to even recognize what they're doing. They'll say, well, the other person, aren't they supposed to? Isn't my son supposed to? Aren't the other devotees in the temple supposed to? Isn't the temple president supposed to? Maybe. But that shouldn't be our motive for going into the relationship. I was one time at a Sunday feast where this woman was taking care of an infant. She had a five-year-old. And she asked the five-year-old, please get me a glass of water. And he said, no. And she said, I gave you milk from my own body for 2 years and you can't give me a glass of water? Okay, so this is the next category. So in the first category, there's one kind of person, the merchant. And the vast, vast majority of relationships in this world are in that category of the merchant. There's two subcategories. This is the category of those who love even when the other party does nothing. Even if the other party is inimical. Not only if the other party doesn't reciprocate, but if the other party reciprocates negatively. So Krishna says there's two subcategories. One is those who are compassionate to everyone, and the other are like the category of parents who have natural affection. Now, what does he say about these people? The merchants had no dharma and no prema, right? Not even any friendship. But for these people, they have lasting dharma, lasting prema. Not only do they have personal happiness, but they even feel the happiness of others. They care, they genuinely care about the happiness of others and the distress of others, which they feel like their own. What do these people have? They have a connection, don't they? Isn't that what we're looking for in relationships? A connection, yoga. These people have a connection. The merchants, do they have any connection? No. Not even connected to themselves. Not even aware of their own interests. So one example is Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj loved someone who was ungrateful. Who did he love who was ungrateful?
His father.
I'm sure we all have people in our lives. Who here has someone in your life who has tried to hurt you? Have anyone in your life who ever tried to hurt you? Well, you've had a nice life. Anybody here have someone in your life who did hurt you, who succeeded? Some of you have really, like, blessed lives there. So Prahlad Maharaj had somebody who tried to hurt him, tried to kill him. Anybody here have somebody who tried to kill you? Nobody. Tried to kill him. It was his own father. I often like to say he was the Adi child abuser. Original child abuser in the universe. And we didn't have a CPO set up then. So he tried to kill his son in so many ways. And Prahlad didn't say to Nisingadev, "Oh, good! Now you killed him. Send him to hell forever." Right? You see this sometimes when there's crimes committed. Somebody will commit a crime, they'll kill somebody, and the relatives go to the court and they'll say to the jury, "You know, you can't send him to hell for too long. Send him to hell as long as possible." So Prahlad Maharaj didn't say that. He said, "Please liberate him. Don't let him suffer." And then Krishna said, "Oh, thin-waisted women, this middle question, like your beautiful waist, describes your pure love for me. You love me even when I do not reciprocate. Indeed, my lack of reciprocation is to show the world this pure love of yours." So if we want to enter into Vrindavan, this is the kind of love that we should have for Krishna and that we should have for all other living entities. Indeed, one reason that Krishna may sometimes hide from us is he wants to see, are you a merchant? Are you a merchant? Did you come to me for bliss? Did you come to me for material prosperity? For liberation? Did you come to me to feel my presence? Or did you come to me because you wanted my happiness? Because that's love. And the gopis, they continue to love Krishna, don't they? Now sometimes they say things like, "We're not going to talk about that boy anymore." Sometimes they say that. They say, "Don't talk about that Krishna anymore. We can't forget him, but he's forgotten about us. Just let's talk about something else." But they can't. That's love. That's love. And the second category, second subcategory in this category, are family members, like mother and fathers. So we were seeing that today on the Purkrama path, the inner path. We went there to chant and we saw this mother monkey. And she had a little tiny baby monkey. who was holding onto her belly and drinking milk. And then when the monkey was all done drinking milk, the mommy monkey and the baby sat down, and the mommy monkey was hugging the baby monkey, and she's taking care of the little baby and looking around. And then another mother monkey came with a little bigger baby monkey, and they were sitting and talking to each other. It was a little mother and baby gathering, mother and mother's playgroup. And the mothers were thinking, you know, I want to take care of my little baby. So parents naturally do this. Parents love their children, even if their children are ungrateful. And little children say things to their parents like, I hate you, mommy. They do. Two-year-old children. The one child that hits his brother over the head with a toy, and you take the toy away, and the child looks at you and says, I hate you, mommy. Okay? When my oldest son was about 3 and a half, something like that, I told him he couldn't have any more cupcakes. You know what cupcakes are? The little small cakes with icing on the top. Because every time he got one, he would just eat the icing and he wouldn't eat the rest of it. And I kept telling him, you have to eat the whole thing. I can't waste it. And he wouldn't do it. So finally I said, okay, one month now, I'm not going to buy you any. The temple had a bakery. I said, no cupcakes for a month. He said, I hate you, mommy. He said, I'm going to go and find a new mommy. He said, I'm leaving. And we still love our children, right? Even, I mean, it's painful. And the children speak like that. It's painful. But still you love them. I was reading a story once about this police officer who was trying to find out who was a serial killer. And it turned out the serial killer was his own son. And so as a police officer, he was writing the story. He said, as a police officer, I wanted him in jail. He said, but as a father, I still loved him. So this is... Prabhupada says in this world, the closest thing we find to this selfless love is the love of the parents, particularly the mother. And why particularly the mother? Because the child comes from one's own body. I was thinking, how do these mother monkeys, why do they have such love for their babies? Because they think the baby is part of themselves. You know, you give birth to the child, you feel like it's your own self. So you love the child like your own self. Okay, now we're going to go to the different kinds of ungrateful people. So far we have the one kind of the merchant, the two kinds of people who reciprocate even to those who are inimical. We're going to look at four main types. There's going to be some subtypes too. Four main types that Krishna's going to tell us of ungrateful persons. Did Jed Bharat respond? No. And then his stepbrothers later, they showed him much unkindness. Did he respond? The dacoits tried to kill him. Did he respond? What was the only time he responded to anybody?
The king.
Why did he respond to the king?
He's asking
something. Actually, the king didn't ask anything initially about spiritual life. So why did Jed Bharat respond to the king? Narayani, why did Jed Bharat respond to Rahugana, though he hadn't responded to anyone else? Because he surrendered. But why did he give the initial instruction? Maharaja Huguna going in his palanquin? Where was his destiny? Huh? To Kapilashram. He was going to a holy place. And he was actually a Gyani. So Jedgar felt, okay, this is somebody who's receptive. But other than that, he was Atmarama. And he didn't respond to favorable people, he didn't respond to unfavorable people, he simply didn't respond. Okay, next category is Aptikama. These are people who have material desires. They have material desires, but they're satisfied. All their material desires are already satisfied. And therefore, they don't feel that they need you. You know, they already have their 300,000 friends, and they don't need another one. So even if you're nice to them, they don't care. And if you're not nice to them, they don't care. So these are materialistic people. These are materialistic people. These are not spiritual people. But they have everything. So they're satisfied in that way. They feel they have the capacity to fulfill all their own desires. They don't need your help to fulfill their desires. So again, if you treat them nicely, they don't care. If you don't treat them nicely, they don't care. Right? So those two classes of people are what we would call indifferent. They're indifferent. They just really don't care. They're not loving, they're not unloving. They're neutral. The first class, they're neutral because they're realized. The second class, they're neutral because materially they feel they have everything that they want. Okay. Now we're going to go to those who are ungrateful. We're going to go to those who are ungrateful. So here we're going to have several categories of the ungrateful. Okay, the first one is just a fool. They don't recognize what others have done for them. They don't even notice it. People are doing all kinds of things for them, and they're not even aware of it. Okay? They may not be calculating like the merchant, but they just don't see it. They're lost in their own world. And therefore, they just don't reciprocate. So this is a very easy place to go to be so caught up in yourself and so caught up in your own life that you don't even notice that anybody's doing anything for you. I'm sure we've been on the other side where we do a lot for people and they don't even notice. Have you had that experience?
Yes.
That you make a lot of sacrifices for someone else, and they don't even know that you've done it. They're just foolish. And one of the things that I've done in a number of communities when we work on being appreciative of one another, is I ask the devotees to meditate on the sacrifices of the other devotees. I do this sometimes in a family and couples counseling also. And it's quite interesting that sometimes when you do this kind of mediation or this kind of counseling, and you ask people, all right, go around the room and give some specific, observable, measurable appreciation of the other people's sacrifice, it's amazing how many times people have nothing to say. That they're struggling, that the people that they live with, and they work with, and they serve with, and they're seeing regularly, they just have nothing to say. Sometimes after someone dies, then they're okay, let's see, what sacrifices did they do? So this is the foolish person. So these people, they have capability of being reciprocal. It's not that they don't have any capability, but they're just distracted by their own life. We call these people very full of themselves. They're really, really absorbed in themselves. So it takes quite a lot for many of us to notice what are other people's sacrifices. What are other people's sacrifices? What are they doing? You know, if we think even here with this retreat, so many people do so many sacrifices so we can have this retreat. And a lot of, you know, we tend to give praise to the main organizers who are very visible. But there's also a lot of people who do a lot of sacrifices that tend to be invisible to us. And it's good to look for those people. You know, to go in the kitchen. This could be a nice assignment for everybody. You know, go in the kitchen and thank people and pay attention to what people are doing. One of the most wonderful things you can do for someone else is to notice their sacrifices. Now, I'll give you, this is a really short, because it should be like a two-hour seminar in and of itself. But you don't appreciate people by saying, you're nice, you're good, you're sincere, you're wonderful. That doesn't really make it for anybody, generally speaking. But if you say very specifically, you know, I notice how that when I come in the temple room here in the morning at 4:30, you're already in the pujari room taking care of the deities. And when I go to bed, you're still up running around helping the devotees. And during the seminars, you have to be chanting your rounds because you haven't had time in the morning because you're helping everybody else. Who am I describing? Who is that person? What's the name of that person that I just described? See if you can find out tomorrow. So those are very specific descriptions of somebody's sacrifices. I can give an example with myself. So Narayani was saying that we have to be careful when people say you gave a nice class. So people will often come up to me and say, I really like that class. So far, I shouldn't say this to be recorded because it sounds like I'm asking for it, but I'm trying to give you an example. So like with these presentations, what do you think I have to do to put together a presentation like this? Any idea? What do I have to do?
Many hours
doing what? What specifically am I doing? Okay, first I have to do the research, right? So I'm looking at different acharyas' commentaries. I'm looking at the different books that describe the pastimes. And I have to find all the pieces, and then what do I have to do? I have to put them together, I have to collate them, and decide which piece from which person I'm going to put in what place. Then what do I have to do?
Find the pictures.
Actually, you'll never guess what I spent 4 hours doing for this presentation. Never guess. One single thing I spent 4 hours on. The background design.
She said.
Oh, really? The background. What do you think I was trying to find there?
A forest.
Yes, I spent 4 hours searching for images of a forest. And most of them were too detailed, and you wouldn't be able to see the letters on the image. And then I thought, well, maybe if I could get a photograph of like a wood carving, you know, you see these beautiful wood carvings of doors and altars that have a forest motif. But they were all weird. They were like, you know, elephants pulling logs and gopis aren't there with the elephants working, and none of them fit. And finally I went to this more abstract one. Alright, and then what else do I have to do? The musical, the pictures, the individual pictures. And decide which pictures fit, and then some pictures the resolution isn't good. You know, because I always check the resolution. And if it's fuzzy, then sometimes it's a great picture, but the wrong resolution. And what else do I have to do with the pictures? Right, edit, crop, just like on your schedule. What's wrong with this picture on the schedule? It was stretched. Okay? This picture's been stretched, it's been distorted. So you have to have the picture in the right size, the right shape, and sometimes you have to make sure you don't distort it, and when you make it bigger, then you can lose the resolution. What else have I done with some of the pictures?
You have to make sure that you have the right pictures. Like, you can still see the words that you have.
Okay, you have to make sure you can still see the words. Did you notice that I cropped some of the pictures?
Yes.
Okay, did that. All right, and then sometimes, you notice that I had sometimes different backgrounds? And then you have like a different background. All right, and then the last thing that I put on here, what do you think was the music? Now, what did I have to do to get the music? Huh? First, I had to research, and I had to find music. So last time I was in America, because I can do this in America, I went on Amazon and I found different music that I can buy there, you know, just little one song. And then I go through the music, all the music I have, and then I have to take a piece of music. What do I have to do with the piece of music? Edit it. I take the music and I have to pull out a 23-second thing or a 30-second thing or a 7-second thing. I have to pull that out and edit it and work with it and label it. And then I have to decide which piece of music is going to go with which slides and set it up and then test it. Sometimes I test it like, oh, that's not going to work. And I go through it again. And then I go through and make sure there's not too much text on any slide and break up the slides. And I try to have a picture. Sometimes I just can't find a picture for a particular slide. Unfortunately, I was finishing this in Vrindavan where I couldn't get enough internet access. So that's why we don't have, if I finished it in the Western country, we'd have a picture on every slide. So far, this is just an example. I've never, ever, 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 ever had a person come to me and list those things. Never. I've never had someone come and say, well, Ormila, thank you so much for finding the forest background. You know, and thank you. I love the way each picture really matched the mood, and I love how you cropped the pictures, and that music matched, but that other music didn't really match. And I think, you know, maybe, I've never had that kind of response, ever. I've been doing this for years and years and years and years and years. That's the kind of, I'm much more interested in that than it was a great class. You follow? Or with the content, and sometimes I get this, with the content, if someone says, you know, when you said that particular thing, it really helped me with this. Okay? So that's the kind of feedback to give people. That's and in order to give people that kind of feedback, you have to do something very extraordinary, which is get out of your own self. It's extremely difficult to get out of our own selves and really connect with another living entity and really meditate on what is this other living entity doing? And especially, what are they doing for me? But even, what are they doing for Krishna? What are they doing for Prabhupada? What are they doing for the movement? To really go there. And we are all hungry for this. We are unbelievably hungry for this. Now, of course, Krishna does this with all of us. He's in our heart. He notices every single little thing that we do. Most people don't really care. They really don't care. But he notices everything, and he's grateful for everything. So you can see this is just the opposite of the loving person. Right? The person who's so wrapped up in themselves, they're not even aware. You know, not even aware. They can't say thank you. They can't reciprocate because they don't know. Okay, now we're going to go to the real nasties. So far we had those who are just detached because they're in Brahman, those who are detached because they have everything, and those who are just self-absorbed and foolish. Now we're going to go to the nasty nasties. The Guru Druha. They're not just indifferent. They are inimical. They actually feel hatred. Someone does something for them, they hate them. Whoa. I started noticing something very strange when I was running a Gurukula. That there are certain parents, certain families who really gave us a lot of trouble. And I noticed that a majority of the families who gave us a lot of trouble were people for whom myself, the school staff, had done an excessive amount of sacrifice for.
Now, some people we did an excessive sacrifice for were reciprocating and appreciative. But almost all of the people who caused us a lot of trouble were people that they said, oh, can you please adjust this rule? We have this special situation. And we said, yes. Can you make this exception? Can you help us with this? I have to go someplace. Can my child stay with you till 7 o'clock at night and I'll pick them up? And that we regularly did those kind of favors for. Practically everybody who really caused us trouble were people who we did a lot of favors for. And I was like, what in the world is going on? And I came to the conclusion that sometimes we hate people who do things for us. Especially if we feel that we can't pay them back. You know, if we have a merchant mentality, then we don't really like it when we're in debt. Just like if you've ever borrowed money from somebody and you couldn't pay them back right away, how did you feel about that person? Did you want to see them? Right? You borrowed some money from them and you told them, I'll pay you back on Tuesday, and you don't have the money on Tuesday or you forgot. Do you want to see them on Tuesday? No. You want to see them with money. If you don't have the money, you don't want to see them. Just a very little side note. A very little side note. This is off the topic, but it's important. If we become lax in our spiritual life, it can be very hard to start up again. You know why? If, like, you take initiation and you stop chanting rounds and you want to start again, do you know why it can be very hard? One reason. Because seeing Krishna makes you feel guilty. You know, it's a very funny thing. When people do something wrong in their spiritual life and say, okay, now go back to Krishna. You don't want to go back to Krishna. Krishna makes you feel bad. Like the person you owe money to and you haven't paid them. And so you want to avoid them. So the very thing we need to do to get back on track, we don't want to do. It's an interesting point. So sometimes the people who've done a lot for us, we hate them. We envy them. Ultimately, conditioned souls feel this way towards Krishna. Krishna's given me everything. There's no way I can repay him. And therefore, we hate him. So, different types. First type, Krishna explains, is when there's a cause for hatred. So someone's done a lot for you, someone's really helped you, but they also did something that was difficult. So I'm sure we have people like this in our life. They've done a lot for us, they've really been a friend, or they really facilitated us in some way, but maybe they said something that was insulting, or they didn't follow through in a promise, or something like that. So we feel we have some reason to hate them. So this is the bottom degree of the guru dura person. Then the next degree is where there's no cause. Someone's protecting you, someone's caring for you, someone's really giving to you, and you simply want harm to them for no reason at all. You just hate them. Okay? Then the worst, when you not only hate them, but you actively do something to harm them. So, again, I'm sure you all have experience with people like this. They've been given, and they turn around and hurt the very person who helps them. We call this bite the hand that feeds you. And boy, I spent an hour looking for a picture of bite the hand that feeds you, and I couldn't find a good one. But bite the hand that feeds you. Okay. And we're going to summarize, in case you couldn't remember all that. What are the types? Give you only what I'm getting. I try to give you a little less than what I'm getting. I want to get a sale.
And as in this relationship, one thinks there's love only if there's some kind of equal exchange. As soon as I think the exchange is not equal, now I don't mind if it's not equal on my part. I don't mind if you're giving me more than I'm getting. But as soon as I think you're getting more, then I become disturbed. So in the business exchange, I tend to focus on what I'm giving, I tend to magnify what I'm giving, and I tend to minimize what I'm getting. I will see all the details of my sacrifice. I will see how I spent 4 hours looking for the forest background. But I won't even notice your sacrifice. I just look at your result. So, you know, I think of all the details of my sacrifice, but if you're late, all I see is that you're late. I don't see all the trouble you went through, even though you're late. Do you follow what I'm saying? Do you understand? I see the details of my sacrifice, and I just look at the end result of yours. I see my sacrifice as voluntary, loving giving. I see your sacrifice not as a sacrifice at all. I see your sacrifice as just your duty. I'm sacrificing, you're doing your duty. Okay? And in this relationship, Krishna said there's no what? There's no love. There's no what else?
Friendship.
There's no friendship. There's no
dharma.
There's no praying. There's no
happiness.
There's no religiousness. There's no friendship even. And the essence of dharma is giving. That's the essence of dharma, is to give. Sarva-gatam brahma nitya-yagya-prajistita. The essence of truth is sacrifice and giving. So this merchant has no interest in sacrifice. Their only interest is in getting, and they are only giving to get. And Krishna says such people are worse than those who have no love at all. Then the selfless giving. The first category is the pure devotees. The example is Prahlad Maharaj. And Krishna calls this, when he gets the answer to this question, he says, my dear gopis who have very thin waists, because this was their middle person, he says, this middle person is like you. Huh? This little person is like you. Middle person is like you. This is your mood, that you're just selflessly giving to me, even when I am cruel to you. And this is real love. This is actual love. And then in family. So in family, especially the example is given of parents. And this is a little lesser because the parents are giving out of a bodily concept. The parents are giving because they consider the child as part of their body. But the principle is still there, that the parents are loving whether or not the child is grateful. And you see this not just between parents and children. Children will care for their parents even if the parents are old and senile and difficult. You'll see this often in a family. And sometimes you'll see it in extended ideas of family, like in your you know, ethnic group, in your national group. You follow what I'm saying? Something where we think of as family, anything where we put that code on it, that this is my family, even if they're not literally family. You can see sometimes this kind of selfless giving. If you think about people in the military, you know, who literally give their right arm for their country. We have an expression in English. You know, I would give my right arm, but you're in the military, you may actually give your right arm. But it's not at the level of pure devotees because it's a bodily concept. All right, then we have the people who are indifferent, and here Krishna has six subcategories. So that's how we get the nine types. The first is those who are on the Brahman platform. They're spiritually satisfied, and therefore they don't reciprocate either favorably or unfavorably. The next is a materialist who feels they can satisfy their own desires, and therefore they just really don't care. Then there's the foolish person who just doesn't notice anything. They're self-absorbed. They're so self-absorbed, they don't even know that anybody's doing anything for them. Then the three inimical people.
So the foolish person isn't inimical. They're just clueless, we say. Right? Then you have the inimical people. So they hate those. All these inimical people hate somebody. So all three of these, they hate someone who's done good for them. But here, the person who's done good for you, they've also done something you don't want. So you have a reason. Here you're hating someone who's only done good for you, and you're hating someone who's done good for you and you hurt them. So it goes from passive hating to active hating. And I think when we're on the receiving end of that, that's the most painful, isn't it? I think this is the most painful. You've given and given and given, and someone actively hurts you in exchange. So we really need to be honest with ourselves. Ryan David Dussey just gave her a seminar about anartha nivritti, to see who are we really. I mean, you know, we like to say, oh, I'm right here, this is me. You know, I'm just loving with everybody, and I don't care how anybody treats me, you know, I just want their welfare, and that's me. But probably that's not true, most likely. And probably most of our relationships, even with devotees, are probably like this. Frankly. You know, or else they're probably somewhere here or here. And sometimes they might be, you know, when we're really doing well, they're probably here. So generally, the best that a conditioned soul gets is the family concept. The swajana, these are my people. Okay, I'm willing to sacrifice even without reciprocation because they're my people. And the rest of the time, we're probably either clueless as to what others are doing, or we're being emergent, or maybe this one. And most conditioned souls kind of bounce around between I'm allowed to hate because I have a good reason, I'm totally self-absorbed, I don't see what's going on, this is my people, therefore I'll sacrifice for them, and what's in it for me? And then if we wonder, especially the what's in it for me, I mean, it's really only here that you're going to find dharma and happiness. So I talked about yesterday about feeling that we're a victim. You know, generally the way that we see the world is I give, I sacrifice, I'm wonderful. Why do I suffer? I'm just a victim. I'm just some sort of a random victim. You know, it's kind of like walking down the street and some stranger steals your bag with your money in it. I'm just a random victim. I didn't do anything to this person. But it's interesting that if we have this mood, we cannot experience dharma, we cannot experience happiness, we cannot experience friendship. We then get disconnected. So it's interesting that Narada Muni, in speaking to the King Prichinabharisha 429-69, talks about that one will see Rahu covering the sun. When we start to see the reality of ourselves, first it's like an eclipse. We see that we're like the sun. We're effulgent, spiritual beings. But we also see that we have this covering of Rahu. This covering of Rahu that takes this desire. We have this desire for beautiful, wonderful, real, loving exchanges. We all have this desire. But we tend not to be doing it ourselves. And sometimes when I'm counseling people, I'll say, you know, why don't you try, just start seeing the sacrifices of the other person? Make a list. And they'll say things like, well, they have to do it first. After they do it, then I'll do it. We're dying for love. Real love. where I simply care about your happiness, and I see all of your sacrifices, and you simply care about my happiness and see all my sacrifices. Where we really know and appreciate the other person and really care about the happiness of the other person. That's what we're looking for, desperately. But at the same time, we're afraid to do it ourselves. We're wondering, why don't I feel it from Krishna? But we're afraid to do it and to be it. What if I get cheated? I have to calculate. So many times I've given and not gotten anything back. What did you say, Rani? What was the third one? Bhakti Tirtha Swami, what was the third one? Yeah, the third solution. Oh, that was such an ended Swami. Okay, what was it? Start now, take a risk. Like that. Start now, take a risk. Start trying to love Krishna unconditionally. Please do not love any jiva separate from Krishna unconditionally. That's a very bad idea. You'll suffer. But you can love all jivas connected with Krishna unconditionally. Don't try to love a jiva separate from Krishna unconditionally. You'll be miserable. It doesn't work. Please don't. Because as soon as it's separate from Krishna, you're looking for reciprocation from that jiva. You follow? It doesn't work. We'll not get reciprocation from other jivas as we want. A simple way to think about it is, have you ever done something trying to impress somebody else? You're doing something, but you're not really interested in what you're doing. You're trying to impress somebody else who's watching you. Do you understand what I'm saying? So you can love other jivas trying to impress Krishna. I think sometimes we serve Krishna trying to impress other jivas. Oh, I let all the devotees see how nicely I'm chanting. Let all the devotees see how I am always on time for Mangalarti. Let all, you know. We're doing these things for Krishna, not to please Krishna, but to impress all these other jivas. We all know how to do that. Yes, we all know how to do that. So you can try to please other jivas to impress Krishna. Krishna, see how nicely I'm treating my husband. Just see. Are you happy? And your husband may not be happy. That you can't control. You may be happy, you may not be happy. Or you may be happy on Monday and not happy on Tuesday. With the same thing. Yes? I always give this example. You know, you cook his favorite meal, whatever it is. Pizza with fresh pineapple and deep fried eggplant and a cheesecake and mango lassi. And he comes home and he says, wow, my favorite meal. And then you make it the next day and he said, again? Can't you make something different? So you can't always please another jiva, it's not possible. But if you do that, you can say, Krishna, Krishna, see? See how I was trying to please this devotee that you gave me to please? You gave me to serve? So that one. Now, we cannot destroy the bad. You cannot just say, I'm going to destroy my bad relationships. I mean, unless what you want to do is come to this one, if you want to just come to the merge into the Brahman person. What we want to do is we want to fill up our heart with the good. If you fill a cup with milk, there's no room for ink, Prabhupada says. You know, if you're looking at this presentation and you're feeling a little depressed, like I felt a little depressed in Narayani's presentation, she's listing all the ways in which you can show that you're full of anarthism. The devotee I was sitting next to with each other said, yeah, boy, all those apply to me. Oh, boy. I guess I'm just at step -3. Yeah. So what often happens in the beginning of Krishna consciousness is one gets very much obsessed with getting rid of the anarthas. We see this commonly in articles that are submitted to Bhakti Gandhi, and I'm on the editorial board of Bhakti Gandhi magazine.
So we get a lot of articles. This is bad about Maya, and this is bad about Maya, and this is bad about Maya, and this is bad, and this is bad, and this is bad, and this is bad, and this is bad. So we vote for Peter Chan Ragusa. We get lots of articles like that. You know what a jack-in-the-box is? You wind it and the toy pops out. So we call these articles Pop Goes the Gita. Pop Goes the Gita. This is bad, this is bad, this is bad. Read Bhagavad Gita, end of the article. We get many articles that are just what's wrong with the material energy, what's wrong with materialistic consciousness, what's bad, what's bad, what's bad, what's bad, what's bad, what's bad, what's bad. So the beginning devotee tends to focus on just what's bad. This is a tendency. But that's not really the process of bhakti. That is actually the process of, anyone know what process that is? It's not bhakti. Gyan. Very good, thank you. That's the process of gyan. Gyan is you examine the world through philosophy and logic and shastra, and you say, no more. Let me become liberated. We are not trying to do gyan, nor are we trying to do gyan in Yajur Bhakti. Now, of course, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, tells us what's wrong with the world. This is the 10th canto, for goodness sakes. This is Krishna talking with the gopis in Ras Lila chapters, and Krishna's telling us what's wrong with materialistic relationships. So, even in the middle of the Ras Lila chapters, we have some understanding of what's wrong with material relationships. So certainly we should be discussing what's wrong with Maya, because Isha Upanishad says you have to know both. But our process is not hating Maya or even becoming neutral to Maya. Our process is falling in love with Krishna and developing real loving relationships with Krishna and Krishna's devotees and all living entities. It is part of the process of bhakti to develop real love for all living entities, soul to soul, via the super soul, Prabhupada says in his in the section of Vaikunthi, Bhagavatam 1.8. So we want to love all living entities because they're part of Krishna, because it will please Krishna, not separately because we are trying to get something from them. So we don't want to be foolishly indifferent, nor do we want to be a merchant, nor do we want to be nice to people because there are svajana. Now, it can be very subtle, because if we think of ISKCON as our family, we can end up serving the devotees not exactly because we're trying to please Krishna and because they're devotees, but because we're thinking of them the way that people think about family. Do you follow me? And that's not quite what we're looking for. I mean, it's a whole lot better than being a merchant or being an immigrant, but it's still not exactly what we want. And if we have that mood of, you know, ISKCON is my family, and therefore I'm serving them like my family, then again we'll feel disappointed. Because, should I say this? Like any family, ISKCON has its family things too. Yes? Its family, how do we say? I don't know. Dysfunctions. Just like in any family, you have some strange relatives. Who here has at least one member of their extended family that's a little odd? So it is kind of like that too. And some people in your family, you know, anyway. So if you think of ISKCON just as the way we think about material family, then you also become somewhat disappointed. So this is, we're not just simply trying to substitute. Then it becomes like my religion, right? You follow? It becomes like a mundane religion. Like one time I was at a festival of India, and I was saying to this one Catholic lady that Jesus says to love your neighbor as yourself. And I said, so I was trying to tell her not to eat meat. And I said, so who are your neighbors? And she said, other Catholics. And so we want to be careful that we don't have some materialistic, mundane kind of religion swajana idea. But we really want to substitute. How can I love Krishna selflessly? How can I love the devotee selflessly in connection with Krishna? Now, the only way to do that
is if we are also a self-satisfied spiritualist, but above the Brahmavadis. Because you cannot love somebody unconditionally if you feel empty. It's just not possible. So I used to be in charge of the prasadam serve-out on Janmashtami. And I learned that you have to get, all the servers have to make themselves a plate first. They have to make themselves a plate and put it on the side. Otherwise, you know what happened? Certain preparations they started being very stingy with. Especially if they saw that it was decreasing and decreasing. And they're starting to think there's not going to be enough for me at the end. Then they weren't giving people enough. And not only were they not giving people enough, the dealings between the servers and the devotee wasn't so sweet, especially as the end of the line, you know. But if they knew, I have a plate with all the best stuff on it already, then they could be very generous. So Srila Prabhupada never, ever, ever says that we're supposed to become free of all desires. Does he ever say that? No. He says you should be filled with spiritual desires. And Prabhupada never says that we're free of material desires because we have hatred for the world, but because we're full with Krishna. He says if you have $1,000, your $10 problems are solved. So when you're full with Krishna, then you don't need anything. You don't need to bargain with anyone. Something like this person, the materialist who has all of his desires fulfilled, he doesn't need to have any relationships. So if we have all of our desires fulfilled from Krishna, then we can become indifferent as to how people treat us. Only then. You can only become, we don't want to be indifferent because we're a fool. But we want to become indifferent because we're full. We don't want to be a fool. We want to be full. Instead of F-O-O-L, we want to be F-U-L-L. We want to be full with Krishna, full and overflowing. And then I don't need anybody. But not like the materialist, well, I don't need you, or the Brahmavadi, I don't need you, so therefore I will ignore you. But I don't need you, therefore I can just give love regardless. If you love me back, that's very nice. You don't love me back, it doesn't matter. You try to hurt me, it doesn't matter. I'm full. Om purna pada purna vidam purna purna vidakshate purna sya purna padaya purna evamsishate. When you take infinity minus infinity is infinity. Everybody remembers this from math? Right? Today we had a practical physics lesson of hanging up the laundry. So practical math lesson. Infinity minus infinity is infinity. When you connect with Krishna, we're ourselves, we're not complete. But as soon as you connect with Krishna, we are complete and we can take unlimited from Krishna and he still has unlimited to give. So when you're connected with Krishna, you're full to overflowing. And then it doesn't matter. Then you can be equal to friends and enemies and so forth. So Krishna gives all of this description of the nine people. Has he answered the question? Of course, the gopis didn't really ask the question out loud, but did he answer? He knew, of course, Krishna knew what they were really asking. With an ordinary man, if you're very feminine and you hint, he may not have any idea what you're trying to say. And he'll say, would you just please be direct? But Krishna here knew. So the gopis were still wondering. Okay, you're not a merchant, we know that, and you're not even just somebody who gives regardless, because otherwise you wouldn't have left, right? Right? If you were a merchant, you wouldn't have left, because we gave unlimitedly to you, you would have given unlimitedly to us. And if you were someone who gives even when people are not reciprocating, you wouldn't have left. And You're not a mother or father, so you must be one of those ungrateful types. All right, Krishna. Which ungrateful person are you? To get the answer, we're going to have to go beyond material conceptions. Now, Krishna willing, we will do on Tuesday.
Okay, we have 11 minutes for questions, comments, corrections, chastisements, additions, subtractions. Yes. Can you turn off the projector? Usually just have to hit the power twice. Yeah, thank you. Any questions? Yes. Microphone.
Thank you for the beautiful presentation. I'm sorry. And my question is maybe a different question, obviously, but how, if you have someone, some devotees or people that you don't have much connection with, just because of the condition they do, what do you do? How do you love them?
Okay, well, why don't you have a connection with them? Is it circumstantial because you just don't have any service that includes them, or they're in another part of the world, or what's your reason for not having a connection with them?
Maybe because different natures.
Okay, well, we're allowed to have different natures. That's what it means to be a person. What was it? Akura and his father-in-law, Prabhupada says in the first canto, they were both pure devotees, but they didn't get along very well. You know that in the spiritual world, there's different groups of cowherd boys, different groups of gopis, different groups of cows. And sometimes they're all together, but other times they hang around with their own group. Sometimes they even criticize each other. Did you know that? In love. There's no enmity. There's no malice. But there's different moods. Prabhupada said, just like in the political parties, you know, in a country, there's more than one political party. And each political party will say, we know the best way to serve the country. No, we know the best way to serve the country. If you read Brihad Bhagavatamrita, so in Vaikuntha, they're having a discussion, can you call Lord Vishnu Gopal? And one group says yes, and one group says no. They had their different opinions. And the group that said no, they said, that's disrespectful to call Lord Vishnu Gopal. So that's what it means to have personality. What does it mean that we're a person? What does it mean to be a person? Does it just mean that my body ends over here? It means we have different natures. So even in this world, of course, our different natures in this world are temporary and they're not part of our real self. But still, we're going to have different natures. And therefore, even though we may all be in the same house, we may not all be in the same room. And we may not also serve exactly in the same department. And that's perfectly fine. It's not that we have to all do everything with everybody. And sometimes it's because we have different cultures. There's a very big difference between the different cultures of the world. You know, Australian culture and Korean culture are practically opposite. Did you know that? Yeah. So there's different norms in different cultures. And sometimes that may cause a lot of problems, that what's rude in one culture, how you show respect in one culture may be how you insult somebody in another culture. The same act behavior. You know, I always give the example of food. So in America, if you just put food on someone's plate without asking them, you're insulting them. It's an insult. But in India, that's how you show respect for people. So the very way that you respect people in one country is how you insult somebody in another country. So what do we do? Try to appreciate the person. This is a whole other discussion. Try to appreciate the other person for what they are. So I have one seminar I teach on personality styles. Everyone has something wonderful about themselves that they're offering to Krishna. And often we tend to see people, we see everybody like me. So generally the way, like I said, we usually think my sacrifices are big and what you do is duty and what I do is sacrifice. So we also tend to think that my weaknesses are not important. Yes, I have weaknesses, but they're in areas that aren't important. So if somebody has a strength in my areas of weakness, I tend not to even see it. Okay, suppose you're not very good at dealing with other people, but you're really, really good at doing the accounts and keeping track of all the money and making sure that everything's balanced. You're really good at doing detailed tasks, and you can sit alone in an office for 4 hours and work out the money, but you don't have a lot of friendly relations. And then you see some other devotee that they're really not good at managing money. They can never remember what they spent on anything, right? They're just not really very good at that at all. And they forget to write things down, but they're just, everybody loves them, and they get along with everybody. Because that's your weakness, you may not see their strength at all. Because if you don't get along well with people, it's probably because you don't care. And you don't think it's very important. So you'll tend to see, oh, they're not good with managing money, therefore they have so many problems. You won't even see their strength. You won't even register on your radar. So I'm not saying you, I'm just giving an example. So we tend to do like that. So good to see what other people do that's good that they do. They may not do something good that I do. They may not have my talents and abilities at all. But they may have other talents and abilities that I don't have at all. They may be offering something wonderful. It really may take some meditation to see it, especially if it's a very, very different nature. And then a huge challenge in our very, very international society is separating the person's character from the person's culture. And to do that, we first have to recognize that culture is real, and it's so much a part of us that we don't even recognize it. We were indoctrinated in our culture when we were like 2-3 years old, and so we automatically assume that certain people are rude or inconsiderate or irresponsible based on cultural consideration. I mean, another very simple, I teach sociology, and cultures can be understood as hierarchical or non-hierarchical, egalitarian or hierarchical. Some cultures are very hierarchical, some cultures are very egalitarian. So if you're from a very egalitarian culture, in egalitarian cultures, people aren't supposed to take higher positions. They're not supposed to take any symbols or outward signs of higher positions. You're supposed to pretend that we're all the same class. Now, of course, that's not, everyone knows that, but you're supposed to pretend. And if anyone takes a higher position, it's a very bad social form. Then in hierarchical cultures, it's just the opposite. You're supposed to be extremely conscious of everybody's status and position. And you're supposed to have different symbols, symbolic and formal actions, to show status. So when those two cultures come together, you have a problem. So there was the main airline of Korea, many years ago, had one of the highest accident rates of all the airlines. And when they did some research, they found out that all the accidents happened when the pilot was flying and the co-pilot saw a problem. Because the Korean culture is very hierarchical. So if the co-pilot saw a problem, he wouldn't want to say so directly to the pilot. I think there's 10 or 15 different ways of saying you in Korean. So he wouldn't want to say anything. He wouldn't want to say, hey, the wing's on fire. He'd say, I think there might be a problem possibly with the left wing. And so the pilot wouldn't get the message on time. They also found that the pilots and co-pilots would not communicate directly to the people in the control tower because they understood the people in the control tower to have a higher status. So they wouldn't say to them, we have 5 minutes of fuel. They'd say, I think we might be getting a little low on fuel now. So the way they solved this problem is they taught all the pilots English. And they required them to speak English in the plane. And they also developed a separate culture among the pilots, a separate egalitarian culture among the pilots, so that the co-pilot could say then to the pilot, they understood this is the norm, and when you're in a plane, that the co-pilot could say to the pilot, there's a fire over there, which they couldn't say before. So when you mix people of different cultures, you have this problem. So I'm from America, which is an egalitarian culture. Australia is much more egalitarian than America. And I just recently just had my first trip to Brazil, where I discovered that the Brazilians are even more egalitarian than the Australians.
French.
The French also is. Yes. And it's part of the culture. So as an American, I never like to take symbols of seniority. If I'm with a group of devotees and they say, here, you sit on a high, I mean, here, this is Vyasa, that's different, but if I'm with a group of devotees and they say, you sit on this chair and we'll sit on the floor, I feel extremely uncomfortable because it's violating all my cultural norms. It's not even with humility, it's just culture. And I'm just like, I'm not supposed to do it because I was trained this way by my parents from the time I was, you know, 1, 2 years old, that you don't do this. But if I'm in a hierarchical culture, and I make everybody sit on the same level, the people from that culture feel very uncomfortable. So if we're all sitting, then they'll be like, really, you have to sit on a chair. I don't want to sit, but you have to sit on a chair. And if I don't sit on a chair, then they're all, the whole time, they're just like, they can't focus. So these, we have sometimes these, do we have to recognize these differences? There's another cultural difference is who's responsible for communication. So in some cultures, the person responsible for communication is the person who's speaking. So if there's a problem, the person who's speaking has to keep working at it until it's clear. And in some cultures, it's the person who's listening who's responsible. So in cultures where the person who's listening is responsible, people generally speak in code. They don't speak straight. They don't say what they mean. They speak in code, and the person listening has to figure it out. And in cultures where people speak direct, where people, the person speaking is responsible, they speak directly. So if you're from a direct speaking culture, and you speak directly, and a person is from a coded speaking culture, they will try to decode your direct message. Okay, we just had an example. Devotee A said to devotee B, we are starting at 10 o'clock. Make sure you're ready by 10 o'clock. Devotee A came from a direct speaking culture. Devotee B came from a coded speaking culture. So devotee B thought, oh, that means we're really going to start at 10:30. The kirtan's going to start at 10 o'clock. I don't need to be there until 10:30. And devotee A said to me, devotee B speculates. I say something and devotee B speculates. I said, no, devotee B is from a coded speaking culture. So when someone from a direct speaking culture is talking with someone from a coded speaking culture, you have to realize that the person is going to try to decode what you're saying. And if you're not speaking in code, who knows what they're going to come up with? And then it goes the other way. If you're listening, if you're from a direct speaking culture and you're listening to somebody from a code speaking culture, they're not speaking directly. You have to decode it. The British are real code speaking people. And I was at a meeting of devotees once, and I asked a question, and one Britisher gave a 15-minute answer, and I said, Prabhu, are you saying no? And he got very uncomfortable. Because in those cultures, you never surface it.
India, Britain, Japan. You never surface it. You never bring the real meaning to the surface. So we had a situation in Detroit where we had a GBC many years ago who was in charge of Detroit and the UK. And he very kindly, thank you, he brought all of our authorities from the UK to run the Detroit temple. So the devotees in the temple were Americans and the leaders were all British. And I remember talking to the temple president, he said, all the devotees here are so rude. And what did the devotees in general say about the leadership? They're all duplicitous. Because the leaders were talking in code, and the devotees in general were speaking directly. So to a code-speaking culture, when you speak directly, it's very rude. To a direct-speaking culture, when you speak in code, it's duplicitous. So when we're dealing with other devotees, you say have a different nature, please, 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 we all have a culture. And we all think, we don't know we have a culture. We just think that's the way it is. We think, it's obvious, this is good. Someone asked in the last class, how do I know what's good and what's bad? We tend to think, this is what's good, this is what's bad. And we judge people's character. We tend to judge people's character, not realizing maybe we're just judging their culture. Maybe they have a very different culture, and they're not rude, and they're not duplicitous, and they're not irresponsible, and they're not speculating. They just have a different. We tend to judge people's character when they just have a different nature. They're very bad at what I'm very good at, but they may be very good at what I'm very bad at. And they may have aspects of their personality that are pleasing Krishna unlimitedly. And thank God, not everybody's like me. What an awful world that would be. So they may just have a different nature. First of all, to study something about culture so you can kind of peel off the cultural layer. Assume that people have good motives. Assume that, especially devotees, assume that devotees are really caring. Assume that devotees are respectful. Assume that devotees are considerate. And figure if they're not so, maybe I'm just interpreting through the lens of my own culture. Maybe they're just a very different kind of person. And I don't necessarily have to serve with them in the same room, but I can greatly appreciate them. I can greatly regard them. Now I really am over time. Prasad is coming in and she doesn't want us to have the time again. You weren't here, so I was pushing them below. I'm a bad girl, sorry. Does that make sense to you? We can appreciate everyone. We can appreciate everyone. And if, despite our trying our best to appreciate someone, we have to conclude that the person is ill-motivated, then at least we can appreciate that they're my teacher to teach me what I shouldn't do. And they can be my teacher to teach me how I can love even somebody who's an immigrant. So in the rare cases, if you find somebody who really is an immigrant, then let this person be my guru to teach me how to have that love of the slender waist of the gopis in the middle, the best person. Thank you. Hare Krishna.